Little has asked you to come down here today. I wonder why this is.
Well, no, mate, he said, you know, we can sit him down to get trained as a mentat.
Yes, well, we can teach you that. There's many ways.
Well, sounds good, mate. Does it involve spice beer? I like me beer, mate.
I hear my computers. It might hinder the process.
Well, mate, let's just hope it doesn't go to the head.
Secret report from the guild. The boat has the spice. The spice must flow. You must listen to the Mullet Guild.
Welcome to the Mullet Guild, a special look at Dune from Phantom Podcast Network's The Lethal Mullet. Find all about the Dune universe here on this podcast. This podcast is for people that have never read Dune and are going into the movie in December 18th this year. Find out all about the world, the planet Arrakis, the different schools, the Swordmasters, the Mentats, the Bene Gesserit, and of course the Navigators. Find out about the medical Sook doctors. Find out about the Atreides, House Carino, and House Harkonnen. All here on Phantom Podcast Network's The Mullet Guild, hosted by the Lethal Mullet.
G'day, mate. How you going? This is the Lethal Mullet, and I'm O'Brien, coming to you live from Quinlan's Cantina in the Gold Coast of Australia. Here, delivering the spice to you, the Dune lovers out there. Oh, of course, loving Frank Herbert's amazing Dune, or Duneverse, I suppose they call it now, don't they? And of course, this is brought to you by, of course, the amazing Phantom Podcast Network, where we celebrate all Phantoms, and everyone's welcome to come in there and have some fun with us all the way from one corner of the globe to the other. And of course, you can find my other show, the sister show, Lethal Mullet Podcast, on there, and many, many more. But tonight, let's chat some Dune. And I've got some really new, great stuff that I've been checking out in merch areas, which we'll chat about very, very soon. And we've talked a little bit more about my Dune journey. So as I've gone through and read the series and what I've got from the series, we're also going to jump in to look at some of the characters. And I think it's one of the best ways to really look at Dune if you haven't, you know, seen it before, or if you haven't read it before. It gives you a bit of an idea about where this goes and why it's such a great series to not only get into and read once, but read many a times. That's how rich the tapestry is when it comes to this storytelling and multi-layered, storylines coming into twining and really giving us a real, I think, human story that's unlike any other when it comes to science fiction and fiction in general. And that's why, to this day, it's one of those ones that continues to drag people in and excite us. Of course, now, of course, on the downward spirals, we head towards December now. We're at the six-month mark now. It's June. We're reading Dune in June. You know, maybe this should be the unofficial Dune month. You know, June in June. June in Dune. but of course, in the next couple of weeks, also on this here show, I'm going to be joined by a fairly semi-regular co-host by the name of Scott Bowman, and you know him well if you're listening to this channel already, as he's one of the co-hosts, along with Derek Marsh, of What a Piece of Junk, a Star Wars podcast. And again, he is a huge Dune fan as well, and he's actually playing the collectible card game this very week, so it'll be great to sort of get his idea on that game, which I've never played myself, but I love the artwork on the cards. I've seen those around the place, and they are legendary. So there you go, a legend of Dune, just like the books. We also have in that, we'll have Kyle Wagner, the co-owner of this podcast channel as well. He is a fan more so of the, I suppose, of the original novel, but also he's into the sci-fi miniseries, and of course the Children of Dune one as well. very much so into those adaptations. So it'd be great to get him on there, and it will basically open the doors to the rest of the series for Kyle. Chat about, of course, Dune Messiah, Children of Dune, and of course on to one of my favourites, probably actually, I've got to say, it's probably my favourite novel in the series, and that is, of course, God Emperor of Dune. This is a bridging work between two trilogies, obviously, and it's really interesting, the fact that this sort of opens the door to the next series, but it also, in doing that, when it opens up to that trilogy, we're really getting an eye open to the Golden Path and what Leto has really led up to, obviously, in his 3,500-year rule, whatever it is. You know, he, an insight into life and, you know, just what it is like to be the Emperor of the known universe. And we'll get into that as well in another episode very soon. Here on The Mullet Guild. To find this show, you can catch it on all podcast forms. You can find it on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher. You can also find it on Podbean and, of course, Google Play, and now on iHeartRadio, which everyone's checking out right now. It's one of the most popular places to check out all podcasts. You catch us on the master feed at fbnet.podbean.com, or download the actual app of Podbean, and you can subscribe to us through that. Check out all the shows like this one. Also, you can check out my other show, The Lethal Mullet Podcast, a celebration of action cinema. Everything from Arnold Schwarzenegger, Chuck Norris, all the way to Jeff Wincott, Jeff Speakman, or two Jeffs, Jean-Claude Van Damme, Dolph Lundgren, you know it, it's all there. You can also catch me at The Lethal Mullet on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram, where I post many amazing things when it comes to action film cinema, Star Wars, science fiction, and of course, Dune. All in one place. We'll catch you on the web.
It is a time to go to the Spice Lounge. Prepare your mouth for a feast of spicy beer.
Scary spicy!
Well, certainly a busy one here at the Spice Bar today. Here on Arrakis, we're chilling out, and we're looking at some upcoming things that I'm going to be reading here in the bar as I get down myself a schooner of spice and enjoy this new book I've picked up. Now, this is a book that I think you all need to check out. It's a fantastic looking book when it comes to the philosophy of Dune. So, the first book I picked up to read in the next couple of weeks is called Dune and Philosophy. And it's got a subtitle to the title there, and it is Weirding Way of the Mentat. And this is part of the Popular Culture and Philosophy series. And this is great. This is edited by Jeffrey Nicholas, and looks like it's got up to a number of essays on Dune. There's just some great, different parts of Dune that this is going to look at. Looks at the ecology, the politics, the ethics, Muad'Dib himself, the heroism. And, of course, it each of those has about three or four different essays into what it is to be Dune. Before I really go into it, all I can say is it's great to have a book outside, obviously, of those written by Kevin J. Ennis and Brian Herbert, and, of course, the original Frank Herbert, to look at, you know, Dune from the outside too. So I'm really looking forward to reading this, and I'll do a review in a future episode. I've also picked up, finally, my own copy of Dreamer of Dune, which is, of course, the biography of Frank Herbert, written by, of course, Brian himself. And years ago, I did read this. So, it must be about close to 8 years ago, maybe. And it is a great book. It really gets into not only the history of Frank, but the history of the Herbert family themselves. And also, you know, I think Brian and Frank's relationship from father and son, you know, and really getting into, well, I suppose, how Brian got his creative genes in some ways. It really is a great read, and you get quite a bit of how Dune came about as well. So it's not particularly just about Dune, but it's also about Frank. It's such an interesting read. Particularly if you're interested in how he got into writing and just his life outside, his really adventurous life. And interesting, though, nonetheless, as a family piece as well. So that's something I'll be delving into after June and philosophy, in and amongst a whole heap of other ones that have come, and the parcel from Amazon. I'm going a bit ballistic when it came to packages coming from Amazon Prime. And because the thing is, we've all been locked up with COVID, obviously, not being able to really go out and do much. And it's a great time to catch up on reading, watching movies and all that sort of stuff that we like to do with pop culture. But with June in particular, you really need the time to sit down and really dissect, enjoy and entertain what it is, you know, and get your own perspective out of what Frank wrote. So really interested in seeing June philosophy does. And obviously the great thing about it is all the different inputs into this can be interesting to read and learn from. We all learn from other writers, and that's the great thing about it. And get a perspective on June that we may not have seen ourselves. So I'm really looking forward to that. All here, of course, in Quintless Cantina.
And now you will show us the technology of the Imperium. Show us something from the David Lynch movie and why it was made.
All right, so what we're going to talk about today from the Lynch film, which I think is misunderstood in some ways, and also something that, well, technically, in an adaptation of Dune, works as a cinema visual effect or visual metaphor in some ways, and that is, of course, the weirding module. Now, I've said this in other podcasts before, I think it's a smart idea, a clever idea of getting through some of the Bene Gesserit ideals through this, using, of course, the weeding module. Now, in most Dune circles, the weeding module is a pretty silly thing to go up when, you've got the Bene Gesserit martial art itself, which should have been on screen. And technically, yeah, it would have been a lot better, I think, but may have taken a little bit longer and a little bit more scenes to really show how special it is and how effective it is, you know, without it being, as David Lynch put it, Kung Fu on the sand dunes, which he didn't want to do. To get across, I think the most powerful part of it is sound, obviously, as that's part of what they do and part of how they can suggest through manipulation others to basically control and find ways to obviously, you know, I suppose, you know, implement. And through sound, obviously, using the voice. Of course, this is a sonic beam weapon, and it takes specific sounds into attacks of basically potent energy, if you like. And it was a way of visually saying that on screen, and sonically as well, obviously, too. So as we see in the movie, we see Paul Atreides learning this at the start, obviously after his training session with Gurney Halleck, with Patrick Stewart, engage the fight, come on. And of course, we see it as he then escapes Arrakeen and goes out to obviously the Fremen, Stilgar and all that, and then teaches them the weirding way. In this case, in the film, it's the way of the weirding module. So, in you know, that's obviously part of what I think David's trying to do is get along that, the weirding way, in a quicker way in some ways. And that way, I think it's clever. I think it's a clever way of getting across the power of the voice and how Paul's hero's journey, I suppose you could say, carries on faster through that, because it's a visual metaphor straight away that this guy is able to take those you know, strengths that he has through the weapon. And then, of course, at the end, you know, Usul no longer needs the weirding module, is the call at the end, obviously, after he literally splits Fade in half with his, you know, voice. So it is part of what they were trying to accomplish there. Obviously, in the book, there is no weirding module, and we have a bit more time to actually get, obviously, the weirding way across. And obviously, the Fremen learn that through the book as well from Lady Jessica and obviously Paul as well. So that's why I think it's clever. It's something different to do that way. I think it was at a time in the 80s when, obviously, science fiction with ray guns and lightsabers and all that sort of stuff. It was cool to have a weapon. It was cool to have something like that. And, you know, I guess in some of those games, obviously, June 2000, June 2, Emperor Battle for Dune, they look like they've pretty much taken ideas of the Weirdy module and others on into those areas. And obviously, too, they took the whole look of pretty much David Lynch's Dune and put it into those games. But I think that was, you know, partly where they took the inspiration of that and took it into a bigger form. I think it was in howitzers or tanks or artillery pieces from what I remember. But all I remember is playing those games for hours on end, you know, and it's one of the reasons I came back to Dune so many times was when each of those games were released, it was, hey, I got to read that novel again, you know, and check it out. Because I always liked, again, the backstory of it too. So it's interesting, you know, there's been little bits and pieces that always carry on from it, yet it's such a sticking point for most fans. And, you know, get down to it. Yeah, it looks cool. And now you'd actually get Weirding modules, replicas. I mean, if you're willing to spend, you know, a good $300-$400, maybe more, on one piece, because obviously you've got the sound piece, the microphone or whatever it is that goes around your neck, and then you've got the handpiece, the blaster, basically, the sonic blaster. But what's interesting about those, too, is the fact that now that 3D printing has become such a big thing, there's now obviously people out there too replicating it in 3D as well. You can see some great ones out there getting it done. So there's also cosplayers of those out there too. It's all out there, folks. You've got to check it out. But at its heart, I like the concept. I've always liked the design of the Weirding modules, but it's not Frank Herbert's Dune. This is David Lynch's Dune. You know, it's his take. It's his way of getting across the Weirding way in a quick way, a visual metaphor for it, and it's interesting enough for me. But I certainly don't want to see Denis Villeneuve do that. I want to see the Dune through his eyes in December 18. It's going to be awesome.
And now it is time to look at one of the greatest characters in the Dune universe and of his school. That is, of course, Duncan Idaho and the Swordmasters of Ginaz. Here on the Mullet.
All right, you want action, you want tough guys, you want masters of action and swordplay, blades, you name it. The closest thing you're going to get to an absolute ninja, samurai, you name it, is the Swordmaster. These were a school of warrior, probably the greatest warriors in the universe when it came to battling with blades. Of course, yeah, basically when the great houses are around, one of the things that made blades come back into play was the use of shields. Obviously, shields were basically came into play to the point where it's pretty much pointless to shoot projectile weapons or vice versa at an opponent. But when the shields came in, swordplay came back. So obviously, it's a very medieval sort of concept, but the fact that it's gone back to hand-to-hand combat, making things basically guns are futile in this sort of day and age. But working for Frank's, you know, way of playing it this way, it brought it back to that sort of chivalrous way, I suppose, of knights battling it out. In this case, shield play brought in the use of kindle blades, swords, and otherwise. But the Swordmasters of Ginaz were regarded as the greatest of all the warriors, even superior, you know, than all other warriors. These guys were obviously a lot more powerful than even the Sardaukar, which, of course, the most feared troops out there, of course, of House Carino, of the Emperor Shaddam IV. But one of the great things about it is, obviously, we'll go into, obviously, the biggest part of that is, of course, the tie it has to Duncan Idaho. But the Ginaz School, you know, when you come down to it and reading some of the works of, obviously, Brian and Kevin, we get to see that the Ginaz School is one that not only teaches one style of swordplay, a lot of the different arms are used in this. And I kind of liken it a little bit to Highlander, you know, the fact that the immortals were ones that weren't just ones that would master, you know, a katana. They would learn how to use, you know, rapier, or they'll use, you know, a long blade or a, you know, battle axe, whatever it was. It was an edged weapon. It was mastered. And I think that's one of the great things about the Guinness School is that, you know, it's not like the Jedi in Star Wars who only master a lightsaber. You know, the swordmaster has to basically master themselves. You know, the martial art is what it is. It's an extension. Like, the weapon is an extension of themselves, which is very true of a lot of martial arts, which is Kung Fu. You've got a number of different swords in most schools of Kung Fu, a number of different blades, and other weaponry that you've got to master. In a bujitsu example, it might be ninjutsu, where you've got to learn so many different weapons. Chains, sticks, kamas, sais, tonfa, all those different weapons. But I think the great things about this is that really the swordmaster is the ultimate martial artist when it comes down to it. You know, knives and swords might be its main prominent part, but again, this is really what brings through some of the characters that we see in the series. And of course, Duncan, who is a very big part of the series. I won't go into why if you haven't read the series yet, and particularly the later books. But Duncan, obviously, is one that carries through and really is a big part of the series. He's the swordmaster that is with House Atreides. So he is there to, I suppose, coach Paul as well. Paul Atreides has many mentors in this series, but one of the big things is that Duncan is pretty much the cool guy, you know. In some ways, it's being described by Jason Momoa. He is the Han Solo of Dune. So, yeah, and he is. He's the cool guy, you know. He is the one that everyone wants to be like. And I think that's what makes it such an interesting character that way. And it'd be interesting to see how that plays out. And we've got the Richard Jordan version in David Lynch, which we don't get to see a lot of, obviously, in that series, even in the Alan Smithy cut. And even through, obviously, the sci-fi miniseries one, which quite good as well. But again, I think Jason Momoa will bring it a certain gravitas and certainly will bring in a lot of, let's just say, a lot of people love Jason Momoa. So it's going to be great to see all the fans get behind this iteration of Duncan. And we will go into a little spoiler here, folks. If you haven't read past Dune, I suggest stopping this podcast now and coming back at a later stage. But Duncan is a huge part of Dune. Obviously, he turns up again in the sequels as a Golar. Obviously, he dies in the first novel, comes back as a Golar, and Golar is basically a clone. It's replicated from whether it's living cells or, in this case, parts of flesh of the original Duncan. And he is, for all intents and purposes, Duncan in Dune Messiah. And obviously, we see him back also in Children of Dune and ongoing. There's many Golars of Duncan, Idaho. So one of the great things about it is that he's constantly serving House Atreides as Sword Master, and obviously in the later books he becomes he's a Mentat. The Tai Luxu bring him back as a Mentat. Obviously it's part of the plan to foil the Emperor Paul Atreides, Paul Muad'Dib, and we get to see a lot more of that through that series. But the great thing about this is I kind of see it is it's a combination of samurai and knights. You know, there's a very much a middle ground right in there. But also, I really do see them as very much like the immortals. So they might not be immortal, but they're trained so well and so used to it, so ready, that they're very much like the McLeods in some ways. It's a big part, I think, of what makes them so highly regarded. But it's interesting, and we will look at the Sardaukar in another episode, and what makes them so feared, you know, from obviously being this a highly trained, completely fearless enemy that the Atreides and many others have had to face over the years. They obviously, you know, serve the Emperor very, very well in that when it comes down to it too. So, Swordmasters. And, you know, definitely one of the great parts of the Dune saga. Alrighty, just before we wrap tonight, I want to let you know what's coming up in the next episode. So Scott Bowman will be my co-host of the next episode and some of the future episodes as well, as we delve into some of the other areas of the universe and look at the first book. So we're looking at Frank Herbert's Dune. We're going to go into some of the rich parts of that and also break it down in basically each part of the novel. We're going to talk about what's great, the scenes, everything. We're also going to chat to him about the collectible card game as well, which I've not played before. The only Dune game I've played tabletop is, of course, the original board game. And, of course, I've got the new release of that, which came out late last year here in Australia. And it is fantastic. There's even an Ixion and Te Luxu version of that that's out now. It's an edition that you can get. Actually, I think it hasn't even hit the stores out here in Australia yet. So that's how new that is as well. But the collectible card game looks fantastic and also has some of the greatest Dune art you're ever going to see out there, that's for sure. So Scott will be joining us on that one, and in a future episode, Kyle will be here as well. And we're going to have some other friends of ours that may be even new to Dune. They haven't got into it before, so we can show them what Dune is all about and explain this amazing universe that Frank Herbert created. All here, of course, on the Mullet Guild, which is, of course, on Phantom Podcast Network. I'm Adam O'Brien, I'm your host. We'll catch you next week, of course, here, same place, same time, drinking spice beer here on the Phantom Podcast Network. Here's Kevin the Radio Nerd Reisel to show you what you can find on the Phantom Podcast Network. Good afternoon, good evening, and good night.
Thank you for listening. We hope you're enjoying this podcast. We'd like to continue to feed your ears by inviting you to listen to our other awesome shows on the Fandom Podcast Network. It starts with our flagship show, Culture Clash, our weekly pop culture podcast. For you movie fans, we have Couch Potato Theater, where we celebrate our favorite cult classic and guilty pleasure movies. We also have Time Warp. That's our fandom flashback show, where we like to look back on our favorite fandoms. For you NFL fans, we have the End Zone podcast. And of course, for you Alfred Hitchcock fans, please check out Good Evening. For you Star Trek and Orville fans, we also have the Union Federation podcast. And for you hard rock metal fans, we have Hair Metal, the 1980s rock metal podcast. Doctor Who fans, we've got one for you as well. We have Type 40, our Doctor Who podcast. If you're a fan of 1980s action films, please check out Lethal Mullet. And our newest show, we have a Star Wars podcast called What a Piece of Junk. You can enjoy all of these great Fandom Podcast Network shows on our master feed at fpnet.podbean.com. The FPNet can also be found on the Podbean app. The Fandom Podcast Network can also be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify. Please search on Facebook for Fandom Podcast Network. You can also email us at fandompodcastnetwork@gmail.com. We are also on Instagram and Twitter under Fandom Podcast Network. Thank you for listening, and remember, respect others and enjoy your fandom.